of the terrible struggle that I have had against sleep so often of late. The pain of the sleeplessness, or the pain of the fear of sleep, and with such unknown horror as it has for me. How blessed are some people whose lives have no fears, no dreads, to whom sleep is a blessing that comes nightly and brings nothing but sweet dreams. From Bram Stoker's Dracula. My name is Becca Ryswig, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories. History is full of engaging and fascinating topics, whether we go back to the dawn of time or only a few years ago. So settle in as we explore one of my favorites. After a longer break than I intended, we are at last back. Providing no unforeseen situations, the podcast will be continuing onward in its previous schedule of new episodes every other Monday. I am also thrilled to announce that after much planning and prep, my second series, So the Story Goes, will be starting the first Monday of November, with new episodes on opposing Mondays. If you're interested in exploring the paranormal, supernatural, cryptids, aliens, or mythology, watch out for a trailer and a link to where you can find it coming out later this week. As we approach the end of spooky season, the closing out of October, I thought it only fitting to dive into one of my favorite topics. Of the movie monsters, the creatures that haunt our nightmares and embody our deepest fears, the vampire holds a special place. Whether we're talking about the terror of Nosferatu, the mind-boggling success of the romance series Twilight, or the many other versions of these blood-sucking creatures. But perhaps the most infamous of them all is Count Dracula, given to us by the novelist Bram Stoker in 1897. The story of Dracula is one which captured the reader's imaginations and continues to do so. Stoker created much of the modern vampire perceptions and lore, pulling his inspiration from folktales and gruesome true stories. I am very excited to share with you two of my favorites of the historical accounts. This episode will be about perhaps the most well-known possible influence and possible namesake, Vlad III, also known as Vlad Tepeci, Vlad the Impaler, and Vlad Dracula. In a second bonus episode coming out on Friday, I will be relating a lesser-known story, that of Mercy Brown and the Rhode Island Vampire Panic. Before we can dig into Vlad's story, let's lay the groundwork. He was the Voivode of Volhynia three separate times from 1448 to 1477, so let's start there. Where is Volhynia? Well, today it makes up a portion of Romania, and can be found south of the Carpathian Mountains and north of the Lower Danube River in East or Southeast Europe, depending on what criteria you're looking at. The land that would become Wallachia and its neighbors had a bit of a storied history. It was part of Rome, serving as what seems to be a portion of a trade and travel route along the Danube. The region was invaded by Goths, who were attacked by Constantine the Great's regime, but ultimately weren't unseated until Attila the Hun invaded. Then we get Byzantine influence, the Slavs cutting through on their way to Byzantine, and Flavius Marcus Tiberius fits in there somewhere too. Next, it's the First Bulgarian Empire and Hungarian conquest, and the return of the Byzantines. And then come the Mongols, who may or may not have ever directly controlled the area that would become Wallachia, but they were definitely in the neighborhood. If you are interested in figures such as Attila and Tiberius, or the Mongols and the various other Near East and Eastern European empires that arose and fell in the early Middle Ages, I'd strongly advise looking at the history of Romania and her neighbors. It is truly fascinating. Tradition holds that the formation of Wallachia can be attributed to Basarab I of Wallachia in the early 1300s when he stood up to Charles I of Hungary. There is some evidence for the Second Bulgarian Empire having some control in the 14th century due to the presence of Bulgarian tax collectors, of all things. In Wallachia, though, there is also evidence from the documents of Radu I that lean more towards autonomy. And finally, an ongoing conflict with the Ottoman Empire started in the late 1300s. This leads to a period of war, ending in an unsteady peace in 1428, which of course brought a great deal of internal strife. For anyone whose head is spinning with all of the names, it's okay. The point of this was to show the conflict that seems to have been at the heart of the land. Now that we know a bit about the land that birthed him, who was Vlad III? I'll begin with where the Dracula portion of his name comes from. Vlad III's father was Vlad II. Holy Roman Emperor Sigismund of Luxembourg placed Vlad II in the Order of the Dragon. This was a group tasked by the church with halting the progression of the Ottoman Empire into Europe. This also gave Vlad II the name Vlad Dracul, or Vlad the Dragon. His son became Vlad Dracula, son of the dragon. While in modern times Dracula tends to be taken to mean of the devil, that is not its historical meaning. Vlad III was proud to be known as the son of the dragon for the prestige the title would have bestowed on his family. Vlad III was the second son and was likely born in Transylvania around 1430. He took control of Wallachia in 1448 following the death of his elder brother, Alexander I Aldea, and Vladislav II's departure to lead a campaign against the Ottomans. His first stint as ruler of Wallachia was cut short when Vladislav returned after being defeated and ran Vlad out of Wallachia. Vlad had wrested control with the assistance of the Ottoman Empire, and it was to them that he turned in his exile. During the years away from Wallachia, he jumped between Edirne, Moldavia, and Transylvania, working to strengthen his ties with allies and build support. Early in the summer of 1456, he marched into Wallachia with Hungarian support. Vladislav was killed, and Vlad Dracula was once more the ruler. He reaffirmed his ties with his allies in Transylvania in September of that year, solidifying that he would support them against the Ottomans and requesting that the same consideration be given to Wallachia. It was during his second time in power that we start to see the stories about him crop up that worked to create the legend of Vlad Dracula. Vlad Dracula made use of internal strife in the surrounding countries and empires to strengthen his power and allegiances. One of these measures was to raid some border villages in Transylvania. This led to some of the Germanic and Slavic tales that we have of Vlad Dracula's bloody nature. These include impalement. The descriptions of impalement are disturbing, but important to understand Vlad's reputation. If you don't want to hear details about torture, you may want to skip ahead about 30 seconds. AllThatIsInteresting.com describes it as, traditionally, the stake would be partially sharpened and planted a point up in the ground. The victim would then be placed over the spike as it was inserted partway into the rectum or vagina. As their own body weight dragged them further onto the pole, the semi-greased wooden stake would force its way up through their body, piercing organs with an agonizing slowness as it eventually penetrated the entire torso, finally tearing an exit wound through the skin of the shoulder, neck, or throat. These acts of impalement are what Vlad is largely remembered for. They are the source of his other name, Vlad Topechi, or Vlad the Impaler. There are additional stories about his enjoyment of the act and other methods of torture, but it is important to remember that these tales would be related by his enemies, and would likely be exaggerated or entirely fabricated in some cases. According to Romanian Defense Minister Jan Michi Pascu, in Henry F. Carey's book Romanian Since 1989, Politics, Economics, and Society, Vlad's crimes would constitute as acts of genocide, and would be considered war crimes in modern times. But Vlad Dracula was a man of contradictions. While many viewed, and view, him as a monster, there are still others that saw him as a just tyrant and a national hero. He was harsh in his punishments, and his extreme distaste for crime is alleged as having lowered the crime rate. He was also seen as instrumental in removing corruption in Wallachia and as a stopping point for the advance of the Ottoman Empire. So, that's what happened. Vlad Dracula was not tied to vampirism until Bram Stoker, And even then, it's hard to say that Stoker truly based his creation on Vlad any more than borrowing a name and half-remembered snippets of Romanian history. Regardless, his name will forever be tied to the infamous vampire who bears his title of Dracula. If you want to learn more about Vlad Dracula, I cannot recommend Kurt W. Tropetal's Vlad the Third Dracula, The Life and Times of the Historical Dracula enough. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it, as well as subscribing and sharing. If you'd like to directly help me, you can head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened or click the link in the show notes. If you have any topics you'd like to hear me cover, or questions or comments about this or past stories, you can send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as STWHpodcast. Despite its later evolution, Dracula was a prestigious name, part of the distinguished heritage of which Vlad took pride. The name Impaler, by contrast, stresses his cruelty and plays into the myth of the demonic tyrant from which the vampire stories evolved. Kurt W. Tropetal.